Coming to you live from St. Louis, Missouri.
It's the Faster Freedom Show.
Your hosts, Sam Prim and Lucas Wolf.
We're talking about freedom.
Hi, Lucas.
What's up, Prim?
How are you?
I'm doing well today. How are you doing?
Good. It's been a minute since we've done this.
I know. You've been on the beach, and I was on the beach, and now we're here in beautiful Missouri.
And neither of us have beautiful tans.
No. I was in the side. Man, I lather up on that SPF.
Yeah,
these
you
days.
Need to get that dome covered
dome.
Up.
Even like going outside for a little walk with the kids, I'm like, hey, wait. Psh.
Yeah, a hat or some sunscreen. It's a new part. It's part of your life.
Yeah, hey. Evolution.
Evolution. Evolution of life. Awesome. So we have a great episode for you today. If you could share this episode, whether you're watching the recording or watching it live, we'd appreciate that. Let us know where you're from in the chat box. We always like to see where our audience is. Today, we're getting into some REI school. Today, we're going to talk about how to be financially independent in 5 years. So what we've done before is we've kind of done a little bit of a, you know, like tactically how to do it, like buy this many rentals, do this, but this we're going to kind of broaden it out a little bit. Then we're going to get into some current headlines. Lucas has been chomping at the bit to talk about some cyber attacks we're going to get into, a little bit of Tiger Woods talk, and some Caitlin Clark talk. Of course, we got to bring up the most popular athlete in the world currently, Caitlin Clark. Then we're going to get into the deal of the week. This is an interesting one. This is a good one we got going. And then we're going to do some riddles and true and falses. So we got quite the episode for everybody today. What is it called, Lucas?
A banger.
There you go. He's got it. You didn't lose your zhuzh yet. Before we get going, you can see in the chat bar or in the little scroll bar across the bottom, go to FasterFreedomFest.com to learn more about our in-person event here in St. Louis coming up in about 2.5 weeks. You excited?
Yeah, about 3 weeks, right? From tomorrow?
3 weeks, literally exactly 3 weeks from
about
tomorrow.
3 weeks away. Yeah, heck yeah, I'm excited. Look at your face and my face up there. I mean, it's just.
You look much more tan than. You're a little more olive skin than I do, I feel like.
That was a summer pick. That was a summer pick, late summer. So that, I had a good glow going.
It looks more even over there than over there.
Yeah, but anyway, it's going to be a lot of fun, man. We're going to change a lot of lives. We're going to dig into each individual person and their needs, have breakout sessions, but also have big group sessions and leadership type talks. It's going to be freaking awesome. I'm super pumped.
It's going to be fun. It's in our office, too, which is really, really fun. So it's going to be a good event. It's going to have a good episode. We're going to rock it. We're going to teach people how to create financial independence.
Yes.
Awesome.
Beautiful.
Let's do it. All right, Lucas. So what does financial independence mean to you? How would you describe it?
Yeah.
Fire.
Love it. Financial independence. Yeah, it's interesting. I don't know if I've ever even used that phrase.
Yeah.
Right? It's mostly like financial freedom.
Mm-hmm.
Right. And I guess to me, it's just not relying on somebody else for income.
Okay.
Like having a job where you could just get fired one day and income stops coming in.
Mm-hmm.
And then also having some sort of recurring revenue.
Okay.
Where you don't have to go out and make a whole bunch of sales over and over again. And if you do have to do that, have some sort of system in place where that kind of gets ran for you. So if you take some time off, whatever that looks like for you, you know, that income still keeps coming in.
So control, consistency, a lot of those type of things, and systemize. So you're not having to grind every day to make a dollar or
exactly.
Go to report somewhere else where somebody else decides
that's
if they're going to sign
you. Freedom.
No.
Yeah.
Well, independence, freedom. Yeah, the similar thing. They're pretty much the same word. So I use financial freedom and independence, security. I use a lot
because I think you can get to financial independence in real estate quicker than freedom. You know, you can rely on your own work rather than somebody else faster. Is it going to be true freedom? In some ways, but you're still going to have to like bust your butt and do all the work and make sure it happens. But you're not reliant on someone. You're not dependent on someone. You're independent. You're creating your own life.
So we're drawing the delineation of independence means you're financially relying on yourself.
Yes.
Freedom means it's more passive. Freedom's a little bit more like passive and impermanent, maybe.
Yep.
Okay. That's a good way
you
to look
like
at
that?
It.
What about you?
Pretty similar. I just look at that word freedom and independence and more of like you're able to kind of do what you want when you want. I relate it to time freedom, which I know is not that, but like financially freedom means you're able to be financially set and do what you want with your time.
Mm-hmm.
Financial independence, I would agree with you. I use them pretty synonymously. Do you like that one?
No.
It's a word.
Spell it.
synonymously. S-Y-N-O-M.
O-U.
Hold on. S-Y-N-O. There's no U. Synon. N-O-U-S.
There's the U.
Synonymously. Synonymously. Got it. All right, perfect. I said it right.
Yeah.
Write in the chat box if you haven't. Let us know where you're from.
If you can spell synonymously, put it in the chat box.
Correct. So, kind of foundational ways that they could work towards this. Because this does, it can happen quicker than at a job, but it still takes time.
Yeah. And I ask that question a lot. Like, do I have the freedom in my life to do what I want? Or do I have the appropriate level of freedom in my life? And I think I do.
Okay.
It's a good thing to check in on.
You were very confident
in
that.
I wasn't. When I asked myself this question the first time, I guess just building a business is so demanding, is why I say that.
It can be.
But, you know, we are willingly doing this, and we're able to do this because we have that freedom and not tied down to a 9-to-5 job or something like that. So in some ways we do have freedom, but then other ways, like maybe the time freedom is not quite where we want it to be, or maybe we don't want it to be there. I don't know. But
I mean, I feel like a lot of people, most people that have visions, like their goal is to relax and lay on the beach every day for 5 hours. That mindset of that being your goal, I don't feel like anybody rarely ever gets there, at least until they're 70. The people that like aren't really like, I don't know if I want to retire, when I want to retire, I like to work and I like to grow. Those are the people that have the ability to go sit on the beach. They just don't.
Yeah.
I just feel like the people that their vision is beach, laying, book, reading all day, every day, that I don't know if they're not as motivated of people or what, or if that's like a shallow goal, but that being your goal, I feel like nobody ever does that. The people that I know that are insanely successful work hard
because
they enjoy it and they work 60 hours a week. I like that little saying is I quit, you know, 9-to-5 job to work 24/7. So it's kind of rings true sometimes.
It for sure does. And I think, I think there's a difference between laying on the beach for 5 hours a day and creating a business that gives you the flexibility to travel and do what you want. And those type of businesses are, I would say, the majority of the people that we work with. Like, not as many people are as wild as us and wanting to build something as big as us, which is just fine. You know, you can create a business that allows you to take a few weeks off and a month off or 2 months off or the whole winter and then come back and kind of get it going again. You know what I mean? It's not a forever thing, and it's just a little bit of sacrifice and, you know, down the road for right now. They want to travel right now. Whereas we're growing to a point where we're 50, 60, whatever, we won't have to ever step foot into anything we don't want to. So, where I feel like people with some lifestyle businesses might kind of still be dabbling or something. I don't know. Is that?
Yeah, no, that makes sense. I think what we're trying to lay the foundation out there is there's different ways to define independence and freedom. There's different goals to have. But in my opinion, the bigger and the deeper, which you know nothing about, goal to that people have, the more likely they are to succeed. I don't know. I know very few people that are extremely successful that just stop working because they have the work ethic that they want to keep working and they're doing something that they enjoy. Somebody that wants to quit working, that doing something they don't enjoy, I don't feel like ever gets there.
Yeah.
That makes sense? Like Elon Musk, people are like, why are you still creating, why are you making TikToks?
Yeah.
Which I haven't made in a while because I'm so banned, but why are you making TikToks if you own 47 million real estate? You're a liar. Or like, you're not like... Well, the Elon Musk works probably 80 hours a week. Does he have to work for money?
No.
Because the people, I'm not comparing me or you to him. He's obviously on a different level.
But it's a nice, good, extreme example.
It's an extreme example of like, it's not always just about money.
Yeah, it's rarely, you know.
For the successful people.
Yeah, we use it as a scorecard in our business and everything and to live the life we want. But when we go about our day, that's not what we're thinking about.
What do you think about what I just did there? Risky.
Very risky. You probably can't hear me anymore.
What?
I'm not even live.
What?
Your ear. Yeah.
Okay. Haha. I took out my earpiece because it's hurting my ear a little bit.
Passion around real estate.
Yes.
I feel like people get into real estate. If they get into it for the right reasons, they'll probably want to continue to grow.
Yes.
You know, if you're getting into it to, you know, sit on the beach 5 hours a day, it's probably not going to grow to the point where you can do that anyway.
Yeah, no, it won't. And I think the other thing is just getting into it is okay if you don't have this really concrete why. Like, our original reason to get into it is not a reason now. So I think you can grow with your why as your companies grow. Like Kong, our buddy Kong, he doesn't want to grow how we want to grow. He wants to do 5 to 7 houses a month. Yep. He's got a virtual VA team that does everything for him. It's a lifestyle business. He can travel, do what he wants. It can go to Vietnam for a month. They can buy his wife all the jewelry that she wants. And his is a lifestyle business. He doesn't want to become a billionaire.
It's incredible. Wrong with that.
The beautiful thing is he knows that and he's pursuing that.
Yeah,
for sure. So he's doing it for himself. He's not trying to chase somebody else or trying to get bigger than somebody. He's trying to do it how he wants to do it.
I love it.
He's an authentic dude. All right, so our story a little bit. So Luke's and I got started investing in 2014-15 time frame.
14. We started in 14.
Yes.
We opened our LLC and bought our first house and refinanced it in 2014.
I think we refinanced it in early 2015,
but
maybe
it's not accurate.
Was it
it could be, actually.
It was cold, so it was either that winter or that spring.
Yeah.
But anyways, so 14-15 time frame, we bought our first rental property, and it took us about 3 years to quit our job. So what are some of the things that we learned that allowed us to quit our jobs? I know a few, but I'm trying to tee it up for you. What did we learn that allowed us to quit our job that we didn't know when we started?
What did we learn that allowed us to quit our jobs? We learned a lot in that time period.
Not trying to replace your income with.
So our initial goal was to get me out of my 9-to-5 so I could focus on the business and grow the business even more. And I didn't love my job. You liked your job okay, and you were making better money than me. So it was seemed like further in the future for you.
Yes.
But I was ready to make the jump as soon as I could replace the income. Mm-hmm. So we tried to replace the income with just adding a shit ton of rental properties as fast as we could.
$200 a time, let's go.
Yeah. Which, you know, honestly, like, is possible.
Mm-hmm.
You know, probably not to the degree that we thought or wanted.
But a little tougher today.
Yeah,
it was much more possible
tougher today.
In 2015 timeframe.
Yeah. Where I think it's possible to replace your 9-to-5 income with rentals is if you enjoy or are willing to manage them yourself. And that's where, you know, that's nowadays, that's almost as profitable as the actual cash flow of the rental.
Mm-hmm.
It's probably about, you know, half comes from the asset or the investment and half comes from the property management. So if you can blend those two together and have, say, a 5-year window, I think you can add enough rentals to be able to quit your job. But
we're talking about 5-year window. Did you do that on purpose?
No.
Okay.
Nope,
I didn't think so.
See
I
that
thought
line.
100% thought that. Okay.
Yeah. But there was, you know, our incomes weren't, you know, we had to replace it just for me $6,000-$7,000 a month, and that's a lot of rental properties. You have to add, you know, what do you think that is, Sam, for maybe 50, 60, 70 for property management and.
I mean, so
cash flow.
So let's say you could probably do $300 a month with the property management right now, maybe $350. Yeah. So $350 a month times, you know, 25 or 30.
Okay. So. Yeah. So if you can get up to 30,
but that's still risky, in my opinion, to take all of your cash flow and live off of it.
I think that's step, we kind of figured that out.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we're like, oh, these don't cash flow like they do on paper.
No, they do not.
And if things go wrong, you know, instead of taking your livelihood to fix that problem in the house,
or becoming a slumlord not fixing it,
figure out a way to. Have other real estate sources of revenue to supplement your 9-to-5 income.
Did you hear about the slumlord recently bought a house from? It's very interesting.
Lauman,
the one Lauman bought.
No.
Oh, okay.
Tell me
about
it.
It's pretty bad. It's not, you wouldn't think he's a slumlord, but he it was a nice house that Lauman bought that he said there was over 100 pee and poop stains all over the basement. There was like leaks, active leaks in the ceiling that weren't replaced, and it was just, the tenant was horrible, and the person owning the house was a slumlord. So,
great story.
You know who it is?
No.
Who did Lauman receive by house? Don't say their name, but yeah.
I wouldn't know.
Okay, well, there you go. I know more about slum coming than you do.
You know that one.
Boom, got you. So basically, Luke's and I, after about two and a half years of buying as many rental properties as we could, we bought a lot. For our first 2.5 years, I mean, most of our portfolio has been purchased in the past like 5 years, but those first, for going from none to probably 25 or 30 doors by the end of 2016, I would say. That's a lot in 2.5 years,
for
2 years.
So yeah, I think we're up to, by like mid 18, we're up to like 60. Does that sound right?
Probably.
And then we bought our 27 pack, which kind of changed everything.
I just know we bought several single families, and then we had that 8-unit commercial bill, so we were up to a decent amount of doors, and it just wasn't making sense. So we figured out, and we're kind of shifting our entire like coaching model to like not just focusing on BRRRR rental properties, on like if you want to replace your job and have more security, and even if you don't want to replace your job, just want more financial independence, you can have financial independence like so you could quit your job maybe if you wanted to, but you don't. You need that active and passive income.
For
so we figured that out. We figured, and we're doing it now, is we just go find properties and then let's wholesale some for money right now.
Yeah.
Let's fix and flip some for money in the near future. And then let's keep some as rentals for long-term wealth. So I know it seems like a lot, but I promise it's not just go find a distressed property. If you're keeping it as a rental with the BRRRR method, you're already doing it. Like, get under contract rather than close on it, sell it before you close, and get it under contract, buy it and rehab it rather than rent it, you sell it. So it's the same, that we're just breaking up the BRRRR method a little bit more to allow people more options. Kong made a great analogy. I was on his podcast yesterday, and he's like, his initial mentor was like, you need to do things multiple ways. If you walk around with $100 bill in your pocket, you have way less options that everybody can break that. You know, you pay for things that everybody can, if you want change, not everybody can break 100, but if you have fives and tens, well, you can. Fives and tens and 20s, like if you just have more options available to you.
Yeah, pennies.
Pennies, nickels, dimes.
Wishing well.
Why do they have pennies?
Wishing wells.
That's why they have pennies? Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Make a wish.
That's why they have pennies. Perfect.
Yeah. Flip it up.
Do it.
Wish comes true. So getting into your kind of figuring out what to do with the property too. So it's the cool part about the BRRRRs or fix and flip, they're so closely tied together, as you mentioned. And what we've done lately is it pencils as a BRRRR deal. And then, you rehab the house, and 95% of the rehab, maybe 90% of the way we rehab our rentals and our flips are pretty are the same.
Yeah.
So we don't have to make that decision right away is the cool news. So we can mark it as a BRRRR, and if something happens where we're going to be out of pocket more than we want to be on the refinance, then we can pivot last minute and sell that thing and go make $25,000.
Yeah, so I think the main focus is if you're looking to quit your job and create financial independence in the next 5 years, like we're talking about this, the best way to do it is to invest in real estate and to utilize some of the things that real estate has to offer. One of the most powerful things about real estate is the multiple options you have. You can wholesale it. You can fix and flip it. You can rent it. You can arbitrage stuff. You can rent on a short-term basis, a midterm basis, a long-term basis. You can go Section 8. You can partner with somebody. You can wholetail. There's like the beautiful thing about real estate is you have so many different ways to make it work depending what the market's throwing at you. I've been talking about this quite a bit, and it hits home. Like, we can't control what the market does, but we can control how we react to what the market does. And that's
for sure. And that's what we're doing right
unless
now.
Unless you're just trying to do one thing, then you don't have control.
Yeah, we talked about that a lot on our coaching call today, is just like the patience it takes in this current interest rate market to and just the humility and self-awareness, like, gosh, I want to scale. Gosh, I want to scale rentals. Gosh, I want to scale. When really, that's not what the market is giving
you. You're itching to scale right now, aren't you?
Oh, yeah. And it's frustrating when you can't. And those deals just don't pencil out like they used to. But the quicker we're like, okay, maybe long-term rentals are few and far between right now. They're still there, but just not like they used to be. Let's focus on fix and flips and maximizing this deal, stack some cash, and then figuring out a way to utilize that cash, whether it's putting money down on rentals or going to buy an apartment complex or whatever. Just take what the market gives you right now.
Yeah, and this is why I love our community, because I kind of knew this. We didn't really articulate it, but I was like thinking about this and thinking about like kind of rebranding a little bit to not the College of Rental Portfolio, but to like just like how to, you know,
for sure,
build wealth and freedom through real estate kind of thing. We'll think of a fun name for it. But like, it's been right in our face. Like, we have almost every day we have a student posting a win. Went back and scrolled, and like 80% of the wins the past 2 months have been, hey, I got my first flip, or hey, I just made $80,000 this flip, or just made $50,000 this flip, or, you know, got my, I'm doing a short-term rental. Like, they're doing it because they're incredible, community people, the members and students, but they're doing what the market's giving them. That's what we teach them. I just never put it all together. Like, it's not just about rentals, especially right now.
For sure. It's about getting creative if you have a rental on long, midterms, short-terms, people out in the West Coast doing a lot of those ADUs and getting creative that way. Mm-hmm. Multifamily structuring, seller finance. That's the type of way rentals work right now for scaling. The burrs are still there, mm-hmm. few and far between. So it's just challenging to scale the way we want to scale right now with mm-hmm. just the traditional long-term rental burrs.
Yeah, so we're learning it. We're getting creative. That's why I created a 80-video MTR course, because midterm rentals, they're not like, not every location you buy a house is good midterm rental, but there are a lot of good locations for midterm rentals that people just
more
don't think about.
Think. Yeah. Same with short-term mm-hmm. rental. They could be, you could have an excellent short-term rental in just like your run-of-the-mill suburb neighborhood. Mm-hmm. It's wild.
Well, right? We were talking with, after our private lender meeting with Kathy, Sean's mom, and or I think it was her saying, like, yeah, we need, like, talk about in St. Peter's, we need midterm rentals in St. Peter's, Missouri. And I know no one listening knows where St. Peter's, Missouri is, but it's a beautiful suburb outside of St. Louis. Like, it's not near, I guess it's near a hospital, but it's not like where you'd ever think anything, but honestly, owner occupants. I don't even think of rentals when I think of that area. So,
well, let's get back to the best ways to replace your income. And if you want to do it with real estate, to me, it's wholesaling or fix and flipping. Mm-hmm. And having multiple exit strategies, of course, but I think knowing yourself and kind of your skill sets before you get into one of those mm-hmm. is important. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, then you can kind of branch off and have those multiple exit strategies. So on the wholesale side, you know, if you love hunting for those deals, you like marketing, you like negotiating deals, I think wholesaling is a great option for you.
Mm-hmm.
I've seen people who are like engineers, like engineer type mindsets.
Oh, gosh, those people.
I know, right? And that try to force wholesaling. And it just doesn't work. They're like, I haven't got a deal in a year. I'm like, no wonder why.
Yeah.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I was like, use your operations and finance skill set and risk management to execute multiple fix and flips and learn how to scale that way.
Or create a system and have somebody else do the damn closing. That's that part of that using other people's skills kind of thing.
Yeah, exactly. And then I've seen the other side, Sam, where people are excellent marketers and sales and negotiators, and then they try to force a flip, and it just is a disaster.
Takes twice as long
twice
as it should
as
have.
Twice as long and just have no idea what they're doing, which is fine. So there's actually a student that we talked to today is she's more on that wholesale sales and marketing mindset. So she's going out and finding these deals.
Mm-hmm.
And then what she'll do is she'll either sell them to the fix and flippers for a wholesale fee or partner with them and kind of go through the construction process with them and then split profits on the back end. So figure out how to learn how to do that as
well.
Did
she do that on her own or do you suggest it?
She is doing it on her own, Sam. Yeah, and I tried to just clarify that multiple exit strategy instead of just kind of falling. She kind of fell into it the first time, but mm-hmm. yeah, just systemize it a little bit for her.
No, I think that's smart. That's just, again, we talk about the beauty of real estate. And the cool thing is, I always tell people, are like, what should I do? Let's say you aren't like a great marketer or great, like you can just kind of do whatever. Like you can like figure out whatever. I always tell people, like, what's your short-term cash position look like? And then what is your long-term goals? Because you're not going to create wealth and definitely not financial freedom mm-hmm. unless you're adding rental properties. We kind of defined it earlier, I guess, how we did. I feel like you can create some financial independence mm-hmm. flipping and wholesaling, but the freedom, the passivity, can you spell that, Lucas?
Nope.
Is passivity a word? Passivity. Passivity. I think that's a word.
That's a word.
I do.
Think?
Okay. Yeah. So the passivity.
It's hard to spell words that aren't actually words.
Maybe it's easier. So the passivity of wealth building is not going to come from flipping and renting. You can do what our boy Jamil did, who's one of a kind. Not many people can build out a wholesale company that you can build and grow and scale across the country and sell for $100 million in 10 years or whatever.
Yeah, I didn't know that was his company. I know that company, and I know someone who works in that company.
Yeah, I mean that, but he's like next level type stuff. So the traditional person, the best way to like fill your cup up now and put some pennies away for the future is, you know, just the mixture of active and passive income. So I always tell people, if you have like bad consumer debt you want to get out of, then fix and flip and wholesale. But if you have a job you like and you want to build wealth and you have some time, I would add rentals and focus on that. But don't pass up a deal that doesn't cash flow. That's a good deal. Make something out of it. Squeeze some juice out of that orange.
Yeah. And I think there's also, so you got your, you know, you got your steps or step one is you have your 9-to-5 job that you do not like.
You're knocking on the door.
Knock, knock, knock. This is your 9-to-5 job that you don't like.
And you're knocking.
And you want to get to independence first. Before freedom ever come, it's independence, right? And we're trying to bridge that gap.
Got it.
There's also a middle ground that people can do. And if they really hate their job and they love real estate, they want to get in it, you can find another W-2 job within the real estate industry.
Like what?
That depends on your skill set as well. But you can be a real estate agent. You can be a property manager. Mm-hmm. You can be a project manager or a general contractor if you love construction. You can find a marketing job if you love that.
Real estate appraiser.
Lot of different good jobs within the real estate industry as a whole, and then you can niche that down to real estate investing industry as well. And that allows you to learn. Get inundated.
Let me spell that.
Inundated by real estate investing knowledge all day long. Maybe have some other type of freedom because you're around it all day long that allows you to start building your rental portfolio or start fixing, flipping on the side that your current job didn't allow you to do.
Inundated.
Dated.
I don't think it's I-N-I-N dated. Inundated.
I like it.
Okay, inundated. So I've written synonymously, passivity, and inundated.
And we're not sure if any of them are real words.
I'm pretty sure synonymously and passivity are words.
But not inundated?
Well, inundated's a word, it's not a spell. So I think they're all three words. The only one I'm synonymously is
undate. So close.
I just, one letter off, one vowel off. Is synonymously a word? I think it is.
That's a word.
And then passivity. I think they're all three words.
I don't think passivity is a word.
Like synonyms are a word, but synonymously, that's a word.
Cinnamon. Women with cinnamon tans. Well, no.
Dominican women with cinnamon tans. Lucas was in Miami.
Passivity.
All right, what about synonym? Yeah, so they're all words then. We know synonym. So boom, Lucas, come at me with that BS again, see what happens. You get knocked out like Drake knocked out Kendrick Lamar.
Oh.
Get into that later.
Yeah.
After Lucas gets in. So, in general, to kind of get us back on the path here to round out this segment before we get on to the next segment, to start this process. So let's say somebody's like, "All right, I want to start this process. What's the first step for me wanting to get into real estate to eventually get financial independence? What would you say the first few steps are?" And I know we covered this a lot, but obviously it's okay to repeat.
Figure out your skill sets, understand your cash position.
Start internally, you're saying, okay.
Yeah.
And look in the mirror.
Yeah, and then kind of try to narrow down your focus a little bit. Mm-hmm. But it's going to start with finding deals, period.
Okay.
If you're more sales and marketing type, going to go the wholesale route, you don't have to worry about the funding, which is nice.
Mm-hmm.
So you just kind of go after it. Start finding deals and then whatever that marketing looks like for you. If you're a wholesaler, there probably should be some level of direct to seller marketing involved in that. If you're a wholesaler, if you're looking for fix and flips, you don't necessarily need that. You can buy from wholesalers, from other connections. If that's the route you want to go, is you got to figure out the money side first. So whether it's hard money lenders or private money lenders, get some sort of guidance limit and pre-approval with them. So when you go to start looking for deals and you find one, you can be confident in the offers that you're making.
Awesome. So
money, deal flow.
All right. I'm going to take a little different direction if that's okay.
Please.
So my biggest thing is taking a little bit further back step. So the best things I think to do is like to get a base level of knowledge, which we talked about before, is understanding what's your options are. If somebody, and you obviously assuming that people know what their options are, which is fine, but I'm trying to take a step back. Like, you do have the options of wholesale, you do have the options of fix and flip. Like, understand the differences of what those things are, understand what it's like to keep long-term rentals, and what a house hack is on a duplex versus just a single family rental. So just getting a base level of knowledge and connecting with the local community is the biggest thing for me. So
education,
getting involved, you got
it.
Education connections are the two biggest things, and there's great ways to do that for free, and then there's great paid ways. We talk about this a decent amount, but some of the best, the most successful, or all the most successful people I know got involved in some type of community of like people that are where they want to be.
And even though Sam mentioned that as a first step, that doesn't stop. So you continue to get connected, you continue to educate throughout all these other steps.
Oh, yeah. I mean, we're going to with what we're doing next week. I mean, we're going to spend $125,000 this year on education.
Yeah, we are.
Yeah. Freaking 90% of our income right there.
Yeah, let's go.
$125,000 on education, being involved in the community. So we believe in it heavily, and everybody I know that's successful does it pretty heavily.
Yep.
Awesome. Anything? Any parting words of wisdom for our peeps on the REI school?
Man, yeah. I think just the more focused you are and the more you can narrow it down before you get started. I know it's not going to be perfect, but the smaller your funnel is, as you get into this, the more successful you're going to be. If you're shotgun approaching, it's going to be very challenging to get good at anything. So kind of figure out where your lane is, and sometimes it just takes doing it to figure that out. But if the more you can narrow that down ahead of time, I think the more successful that first deal is going
to
be.
I like it. Awesome. Thanks for running us out. Walls. All right, before we get to the next segment, make sure to share this episode if you are watching us live. We're live on Facebook, X, and YouTube. So if you're watching, give us a comment. Share this live, and we are going to be recorded on YouTube and Facebook, and I guess they're all recorded afterwards, but then the podcast platforms, make sure to like and rate. We would appreciate that very much. All right, Luke's ready to get into headlines.
Yes.
Are you excited? I mean, Lucas, we've been trying to avoid talking about this topic for like 5 episodes in a row, but Lucas in the pre-show prep keeps pushing this topic. So what we're going to talk about is, are cyber attacks a major concern when it comes to the Olympics?
Yeah, what are your thoughts on that, Sam?
So I'll tell you, because I know you have a lot
So number one, they're in Paris.
Yes. Did I heard this the other day? Is this true? Can you look this up? I know France gave us the Statue of Liberty. Hey. Did we give them the Eiffel Tower? Is that how that went down?
Hey, tit for
tat. I don't think that's true.
Quid pro quo.
Is that true? I don't know that that's true. I heard that the other day.
How do you hundreds of foot monument, Sam? How does that happen?
How do you do what?
How do you give somebody that?
Oh, they built it over in France and then shipped it over here, like in pieces.
Okay.
That complicated?
Yeah. No.
Yeah, no, we didn't. That didn't. So to be clear, I said I didn't think it was true, but I saw there's so many things that people say on the internet that just are not true.
Everything.
Yeah.
Well, Google's usually right.
I mean, they are. And I.
AI.
The record states I did not say that I thought that was true. All right, so.
We get it, Sam. It's okay if you're wrong.
All right. So, anyways, what do you think about the cybersecurity stuff?
Yeah. So, let's start with. I love the Olympics.
Okay.
But I guess as I get older, like every sporting event, I feel like my excitement just dwindles just a little bit.
Okay.
Every year, like for the
man, you're not even gonna care about sports in 20 years.
Maybe I won't, or maybe it'll come back up when I'm a little less busy. I don't know. But it's just. We talk about this a lot. Like, we have to prioritize certain things in our lives, and it sucks. But this is one of them that kind of gets put to the side when you got a family and building a business. And
I've
stuff
never
like that.
Been a huge Olympic guy, but I do sympathize with you a little bit, because I remember I used to get excited before all 162 Cardinal baseball games.
Yeah,
every single game I was like, yeah, let's go.
You would have to like watch it in a separate room. Yeah, by yourself. No one could.
And it's a freaking. There's 162 of them. They're very like you can.
Yes. So along those lines, you know where I'm coming from. So I kind of forgot that the Summer Olympics were this year. I'm not going to lie.
I get that. We got a lot of shit going on.
But I'm excited for them now that they're going to be here in a few months, and they're in beautiful Paris. Never been there.
Looks I think
beautiful.
Next round's in L.A., I think.
Next round. 2028?
Or 32, I think, is in L.A., yeah.
Okay, nice. That'll be cool.
Look that up. We were just a fact checker for all the shit that comes out of my mouth every episode.
Look that up. This guy's pointing at you. So,
you haven't talked one thing about the cyber attacks. This is all you've been talking about for 3 weeks is the cyber attack stuff.
Olympics. So looking forward to the Olympics. We got Steph and Bron on the team, on the basketball
and K-Dizzle.
Team. So super excited about that. We got people from Russia.
LA 2028. Told you.
Ooh, hashtag. We got people from Russia that can attend the Olympics, but not under the Russian flag. They can't, like, fly the flag.
All right.
Because, obviously, their war and all that crap that they're
and
doing.
And Russian, this is, again, don't have to look this up, but I've seen a lot of, and there one recently of, like, Russian, like, medals getting stripped because they, like, cheat and take drugs. Like, it's like they're the stereotype for a reason. But
so in 2018, I guess that was the That was the Winter Olympics in South Korea.
Where was that in South Korea?
I can't pronounce that.
Where was that?
Pyeongchang?
It's Pyeongchang.
Is it really?
I have no idea. I said confidently, though.
I think you're probably right.
Pyeongchang?
Pyeongchang. Okay, South Korea. And that was had some cyber attacks that caused internet disruptions, and everybody blamed Russia. So that's funny to me. It probably was them, but they're like the fall guy.
Yeah, they're
sure.
Like the they're always fucking with people.
So they're they don't want that to happen again. So they're doing a whole bunch of tests, and Shana was talking about the committee hiring people to like try to hack them and figuring out ways to block it. But they're gonna happen. It's just how we will respond.
There will be cyber attacks. That says how will we respond? We don't know. I always thought that like if what is more lucrative, like becoming a hacker and like hacking into things? What are you doing?
And as our hackers, are they hacking to get money?
Well, I think so. Tyler and Shane, you're young cats. So a hacker, like a good hacker, like probably always stays a hacker and does illegal shit, but like pretty good hackers, I feel like they hack stuff and then the government hires them and then they like help prevent things. So
yeah,
they probably
like
pay
you
them.
You either go to jail for 50 years or you come.
Well,
if
Frank Abagnale from Catch Me If You Can, they hired him after he did all that stuff. What?
You see that?
That was about the Eiffel Tower.
Not true.
She's like, that's not at all true. Yeah. She said that on the Eiffel Tower thing.
You got a lot of good facts today.
Yes, I do. But I feel like that's like the end game for a hacker is getting and doing it and then just having the government hire you, right? That Tyler agreed. He knows. He's. That's what I did with Frank Abagnale from Catch Me If You Can.
What are you going to do?
You're
going
to help the government.
Help.
Yeah. Cool.
Yep. Cyber attacks, bro.
Got it. All right, that's exactly where I thought that was going to go. All right, you get the second highlight.
Yeah, so Tiger Woods. So the Masters just finished up. Tiger had a good, solid couple rounds. I think the course was playing super hard this week. Mm-hmm. Tiger, how old's Tiger now? 48 nowadays. So still out there. He looked great.
Yeah.
Right? As far as like physically moving around and his body and everything.
Yeah, a little limpy, but yeah.
Not as much as it was like right when the accident happened.
Well, yeah, yeah.
Yeah. So he's getting back in walking shape for sure. He looked great. Had a great two rounds. Made the cut by 5-6 strokes.
A few strokes, yeah. I think it was,
like
3-4, yeah.
And then kind of fell apart once he got into the weekend there and had some of his worst rounds ever. And like I said, to be fair, this course at the Masters is very, very challenging. We have professional golfers missing 5-foot putts by 8 inches because those are the breaks. So made his 24th consecutive cut, which is amazing, first of all. Just amazing. I mean, there's great golfers.
Broke a record, yeah.
Did not make this cut this week. Like, he outscored Jordan Spieth.
Yep.
He outscored, I'm not a great golfer guy, but a lot of other high-name guys, being 48 years old and with a bum leg.
Yeah.
So pretty cool, but kind of lost some steam. Probably not quite into the, four-round shape that he normally would be. Shot at 82. We'd probably shoot 115 there. So not bad. Amateurish. So what do you think, Sam? You think this guy should hang it up?
I do not think that. No, the fact that he made the cut when I bet, we could look it up. I bet 20 of the top 50 players in the world missed the cut, and he made the cut. So, yes, and he's just planning on playing. He's still recovering from that injury.
Yeah.
Phil Mickelson's 54, and it played low. So, like, I mean, as long as his leg can get him through things, I think he's should keep playing in it. If he starts missing the cut, then, yeah. But if he's making the cut when other professionals are missing the cut, then and he's planning to start to play, like, once a month to kind of get back in the groove. This was his first, like, four-round tournament, or he's only played in a couple, like, all four-round tournaments in, like, years. So.
Yeah.
I think he should keep playing in it. The numbers are way bigger when he's in it. He is starting to lose that a little bit, though. I heard this Masters, he wasn't in it on Sunday, but it didn't get a very good rating on Sunday.
Yeah, and kind of the same thing, man. We got friggin' lives, you know what I mean? Kind of the same thing with the Olympics. Like, it's fun to watch to a degree, like, sometimes in the background, but, like, Yeah. You and I are not going to just put it on TV all day and just sit in front of it and watch it. So it's just hard. It's a
did
lot.
Did you see the meme of him shaking that tree?
Yeah, that's pretty.
That's
funny.
So funny, and all the stuff people were saying is like, when I recycle.
It's
like,
he's a big tree guy.
Yeah, he's a big tree guy. Tiger Woods.
I get it. Mm-hmm. I get it. But I guess what it's fun to have him out there. There's still like people that like feel like he should be winning. Like. As good as everybody else and like get mad when he doesn't. And that kind of irks me a little bit. I'm like, give the guy a break. Number one. But look at Tiger's career. Like what a roller coaster career.
Oh my gosh.
That this guy had.
Yeah.
Like everybody loved him, you know, poster boy. And then, just at the pinnacle of the best
everything
golf we've ever said, seen with all the endorsements and celebrity status. And then just boom for, no pun intended there.
Yeah, I got hit in the back of a golf club.
Yeah, crashed a car, you know.
Accident.
Had a whole, you know, taken a lot of pills and, man, just not great. And then kind of fell off the face of the earth and everybody hated him for a while. And then he climbed out of that and started to get his fans again. And then
he won a few events, won the Masters.
Won the Masters. So just quite the roller coaster that I don't know if we'll ever see again. Kobe was kind of similar, I think.
Kobe didn't have as much downs, I don't think.
Yeah, well, when, you know, like the...
he had the affair thing, but that was...
Yeah.
Oh, Tiger was... I mean, there's that video of Tiger when he got pulled over all, like, drugged out or whatever on pills,
gosh.
And he thought he was in Florida and he was in California or vice versa. He didn't know where he was.
Yeah.
Like, do you know where you are, sir? And he's like, yeah, I'm in California. And they're like, no, you're in Florida.
Yeah, wrong side of the country.
Yes, a couple time zones off there, bro.
Yeah, so... he's had an interesting career, you know. I wish the best for him. And his son's gonna, you know, I don't know how good he's gonna be, but
he
probably enjoys like playing with his son more than he does playing in the Masters nowadays.
He seemed to enjoy it more, and yeah, I think his story is really interesting. And like you said, the highest high ever, not even close.
Yeah.
To like, there's the
that might be the best mugshot of all time.
Yeah, that's a rough one. He was feeling okay in that one. But so he the highest high walls like ever, not even close, and then just down and then kind of back up. And he the interesting thing was, you know how he
that one photo of the guy's got him.
And Tiger's smiling too. You know, he won, I think you know, he won like the 97 Masters by like 16 strokes.
Yeah, that's crazy.
And like
he was 21, right?
And I think his, we got a good question we can get to in a minute, but Lucas, we'll move on to the Caitlin Clark thing. But I think something along the lines of in his past, like in like since 2000, the best to par majors person is like Phil Mickelson, like plus 110. So since 2000, Phil's average over par or under par for the majors like 110. Tigers is like minus 200 or something. They're the best golfers in the world, and it's not even close.
That's crazy.
So.
What do you think the stuff that Scotty's doing? Do you think that is
he's on his way, man?
He got a chance to have some comparable type runs, or what do you think?
I don't think. I mean, Scotty's the one of the closer things we've seen to Tiger in a while, in my opinion. But I mean, he's got to keep it up for so much longer. I mean, like Scotty's like in his prime right now, just going into it, and he won by 4 strokes. Great. Tiger literally won by 16.
Yeah.
Imagine be like somebody out there doing that much better.
Yeah. And it's not that the other people shot bad. Like, even if Tiger shot his round what did he end up? Like, minus at 20-something?
Yeah.
So he would have beat Scotty by, like, 10 strokes or something like that.
Yeah, so that's the point. I think it's equivalent. I saw something. It's equivalent to, like, the Super Bowl. Like, the let's say the Chiefs won. They won, like, 88-2. That's, like, what it would be. That's the equivalent of the ridiculousness of his
dominance.
That's
one of the cool things about golf. So as, like, other sports grow and just time goes on, there's like eras and there's like competition, which is applicable to golf. You're playing as your competition improves and that changes all the time, but your scores don't much, you know what I mean? Like someone could score on the same course 27 years ago, that number, it's the same thing as scoring that today.
Yes.
You know what I mean? Maybe some technology improvements.
And they tend to slightly, like, they call, like, tigerizing the courses. They used to move back the tee boxes 50 yards. So they do change a little bit, but yeah.
But, yeah, so I think that's a cool comparison to see how dominant he was that long ago.
Yeah,
And it wasn't just the competition he was playing against.
Yes.
He dominated the courses.
Yes, he was a nothing like we've ever seen before. Yeah. Therefore, I mean, imagine if he didn't, which part of the reason made him great was his – issue. But imagine if he didn't like have that lull. Like he'd have like 25 majors by now.
Yeah, I mean, you almost need that in a way sometimes. Like LeBron's done a great job of like
he's the only one ever.
The consistency's there. Maybe like not quite the peaks of some of these other, but that consistent greatness is there. Well, we're seeing something similar with like Jordan, like at the top of the mountain, not even close, and then kind of whatever. Maybe he needed that mental break. Maybe he self-sabotaged.
I would assume so. Yeah, that's my potentially. I agree. I that's part of what Jordan's more mentally probably strong, like on the court, but like. He needed those breaks. Yeah. Obviously, quit twice, and LeBron's been able to play three. You can say he's flopping and is on the court antics, but like off the court, LeBron's obviously very, very mentally strong to keep his body in shape. And
so, if Tiger didn't have that, maybe he doesn't win the Masters in 2018 or whatever that year that was. So, super cool. Well, let's get into our last headline here.
So. All right. So, fans shocked at the salary of number one pick Caitlin Clark. So she is like
fresh fit for the WNBA.
Yes, she's the first one to the Prada. Clothed her, the first time Prada's ever clothed somebody for the WNBA draft. So she is like breaking like insane amount of records with like the viewership. And did you see like the games that she played in the WNBA and
a few stats on that.
The insane, like so much more than
Final Four game that they beat LSU. I think that was drew 12 point something million viewers. And for example, like. A game seven of like the NBA Finals draws like 10 million.
It did more than it did more than pretty much anything that wasn't football.
Yeah,
which is insane.
Yeah,
for especially because they don't get viewed really comparing to like the men's tournament. But I'm sure the women's tournament outpaced it this year. I would guess as far as viewership goes, or close.
Because I think the championship game was like 14 million
or much closer than it's ever been. Yeah. So she's completely rewriting the script for that sport. It's been really, really cool to see.
Yeah, and it's more than any basketball game ever on ESPN. So ESPN doesn't carry like a whole bunch of CBS has. Right, I think the Final Four for
It's usually CBS.
So,
yeah,
so maybe one of these bigger networks was even going to pick up some more women games in the future, something like that. When they saw that viewership,
I've heard something like 36 of their 44 games are picked up for national television.
You're talking about the Iowa team that she's
no the team she got drafted by
Indiana, that's cool. Well, she's changed women's basketball. Which is you can't say that a lot. And JJ Redick talks about this a lot on his podcast when he's like
him and LBJ or his other one.
His other one, but
him and LeBron's is good. They just drink wine, and JJ's so smart and you like able to get in LeBron's head a little bit.
It's fantastic. But JJ says like the league's gonna go where the stars take it, and you know WNBA has had some stars, but I don't think anybody to this level.
No.
That's not saying she's going to be the best NBA WNBA player of all time. She might be, but just her her star status has been so fun to watch.
Yeah, no, it's been cool. She's like a bona fide like rock star. It is insane some of the things that and the numbers that she's drawn. And I heard somebody saying the other day, they're like, she's been the first person to replicate Steph Curry's game. Like to a certain degree, successfully out of like men and women, like no other guy's been able to do it. So she's just that range. She does her average 3 points like 26 freaking feet. Like
it doesn't happen overnight.
She's worked her ass off. My goodness,
put in is unbelievable. So out of all that fame, all that greatness,
I know where you're going with this.
Yeah, she's gonna get paid the big bucks, right?
Oh, Sam? Yeah, for sure.
Tell us about her first contract in the WNBA.
So she's the most popular, one of the most popular athletes in the world right now. The most popular, that's not even goes without saying, the most popular female basketball player ever. She, her first contract for her first year is going to make $76,000 in the WNBA. Mm-hmm. I saw a stat that Rudy Gobert got fined $100,000 for making fun of the refs, and her salary is $76,000.
Yeah, I was making that as a below average engineer.
Yes, yeah, far below average, but yes.
So,
it's a couple derivatives below.
Yeah, so that is super interesting. She was offered $5 million to play in Ice Cube's Big Three League, correct?
Mm-hmm, yes.
So that would have been an interesting change of course. I don't think it was the right play for her to do that, but super cool that was at least an opportunity for her. And most of her income is going to be based off these big endorsement deals, don't you think?
And she'll get huge endorsement deals, so she will do very, very well. Yeah. So, yeah, I just love that she's blazing the trail, and hopefully this will get more viewership to the WNBA because I'm pretty sure the WNBA is funded by the NBA. I don't think they make a ton of money just because it's not – they don't pay their players a ton, but, like, running out the stadiums and doing all that kind of stuff is expensive. And
yeah, for sure. So you know, that's the reason that they can't afford to pay the level that the NBA does.
This
right
isn't
now.
Like a gender inequality pay gap. There, that thing is real, but it's not this. It's based on the income that they so.
Yeah, and you know, don't want to get in too much hot water for this because I obviously believe in equal pay for both men and women. Like, if there's a engineer like doing
the same
same exact job,
should be paid the exact same.
Exactly.
Doesn't matter what sex they are.
Whoever you know can perform better should be paid more. Though it's the same sport. It's, you know, put her on an NBA team, you know, she wouldn't, you know, be that successful.
She would make the team. It is what it is, yeah.
So even though it's the same sport, it's a different league, different teams, so it's a little...
It's just a completely different sport, yeah. So then the pay is all viewed to, like, TV deals. And so she will get paid a lot more money if more people watch. The TV deals will be higher. So she's going to raise everybody's salary in the WNBA 25, 50% over the next few years, which is cool. Good
amazing.
For her. Good for everybody else. I love it. And part of it is the you know, NCAA women's and WNBA is such a better TV product than it was 15, 20 years ago. They're fast, they're strong, they can shoot. It's much more entertaining to watch, so they'll get more views and they'll get paid more. It's just part of the process of it. And people in the NBA and, like, back in the day, like, people played NFL and baseball, like, they would have, like, other jobs because they didn't make enough money playing those sports. So, like, back in the early 1900s, like, the people were, like, I think, like, engineers and, like, this and that, and then they played baseball on the side as a professional.
Yeah.
So
yeah,
it's a cycle, and it'll work its way towards it.
But you're right. She's going to change the way women get paid in basketball because of what she can bring to the table.
It's awesome. So good for her. That is awesome.
All right, you want to get into some back to real estate and get into some of these questions?
Let's get into some of these questions. Make sure to hit the notification bell if you're watching this on YouTube now or the recording. You can see we talk life, real estate, business, finance, all the fun things. Make sure to hit the notification bell and like this video. We would really appreciate it. And if you listen to the podcast, we'd really appreciate you giving this thing a rating and make sure we're on your weekly podcast list. Because I want to get into with Lucas, who's, I don't know if he knows enough about this, but in the future, I want to get into the how AAU culture has ruined American basketball.
Oh, that'd be good. Yeah, I think we can broaden it a little bit. Just and I think AAU is you know, the select version of what basketball has, right?
Mm-hmm.
But I think we can broaden that to just travel and select sports in general, because it could be
So broad as we can get. I just know I've been hearing this topic quite a bit on my boys' show, you know, Coward, just how AAU culture has, like, ruined America. Like, the rest of the world, like, it's a global sport now, but the last six MVPs were all European. The people running the league, Luka, most of them are because they come over here, they're mature, they're ready to play. They haven't been pandered to for the past 15 years. They haven't been 12 years old, somebody giving them checks on the side in AAU. And you know more about AAU than I do, but I think it's gotten really gross and slimy and nasty.
Yeah.
And it's not ruined, but, like, the world's gotten so much better and Americans have not.
Yeah. I mean, if we could dig into that now, but maybe we save it.
We'll save it. That's a fun one because I feel like I know a little bit more about it here and some of the stuff that they talk about. And you probably know because you played AAU. I didn't.
Yeah.
So, because I was too busy dunking on your ass.
Yeah.
All right. So riddle me this.
Do you want to get to Anthony's real estate?
Let's get to Anthony's. Yeah. Anthony Garza. Thanks for asking the question. His question is for the radio audience. And when I say radio, I know that means podcasting. Don't worry. We're not on the radio. So can you guys help me if this is a good buy? I did a walkthrough on a fully rented fourplex using the 5% conventional loan. So just so you know, Anthony, you need to be living in one of the units. The 5% conventional loan is not you have to be owner-occupied to get that 5% conventional loan. The mortgage will be $2,600 a month, and I'll be living – okay, fucking idiot, didn't read ahead. I'll be living in one of the units. Awesome. Okay. Rent will be picked up for this month, every month, That rent that will be picked up every month is $2,850.
Yeah,
no, so it's not
no,
a deal.
No, like, just for – you know, I would look and see – You know, there's opportunities there for sure. So that means each unit is renting for what? What would that be? About $700 a month?
Yes.
Yeah, about $700 a month with a $2,600 mortgage. That spread is just not there.
Correct.
Ballpark, you probably want your mortgage, and that might be including
taxes
and insurance. So that might help a little bit in my discussion. But just general mortgage principal and interest payment, you probably want to see it more along the lines of 50 to 60% of your income that it's bringing in. So that probably includes taxes and insurance. So take that out and see if you're at that 50%, 50-60% markup. But if he's living in one of them, though, man,
I mean, so
it's almost like break even because you got maintenance you gotta account for. Mm-hmm. If you manage it yourself, you can save some money there.
Mm-hmm.
And then you'll have some vacancy that you gotta take into account. But if you're living in one of them,
it's a good way to live extremely inexpensively at minimum.
Exactly.
But you're not going to make a ton of money with those numbers.
Yeah, you're probably
or if you can raise
with
rent
a little bit of maintenance, you probably coming out of pocket if that 2,600, 2,850 only be three units, so that's good. So you get into a house and get into the game for free,
rent for $900 a unit, yeah.
So. So you live in there for, what is it? You got to live in there for one or 2 years, one of the two?
2 years before you can sell it, yeah.
2 years? Well,
I don't know with this conventional loan thing. I don't know how that works.
Well, maybe 1 year before you move out.
Okay.
And then rent that other unit for $900, $1,000. And then we're cooking with fire. Cooking with grease? What is it called?
Cooking with grease.
So
cooking with oil.
I like it better than I initially liked it. You get to live pretty much rent-free.
Yeah.
And then you get in the game.
Not
going to
cash for $1,000 a month, but I like it. And then Wokefeller, yes, we do midterm rentals.
Yep, and then you could also look at short-terming or mid-terming one or two of those units.
Woo!
In there too, to really increase that income.
Walls come with the heat.
That's a perfect time to do it where you don't have like one house that's fully reliant on short-term or mid-term income. You got a fourplex where you can keep a couple as long-term consistent income and then go try to maximize a couple with that midterm or short-term.
Awesome. Let's go to riddle me we'll go to deal of the week before I make Lucas look stupid. Ooh, you're gonna get these so wrong. All right, so Lucas, why don't you walk through this deal of the week that I know a little bit about, but you know much more than I do.
Yeah, deal of the week. So bought a house on a golf course. This wasn't your typical distressed type of property. I think as is, the owners could have listed it for $500,000.
Okay.
And without doing anything. And it had a couple repairs that were needed, don't get me wrong. But they just didn't want to do that, man. They were moving to Florida, I believe, and they wanted a quick and easy sale. So if they're
okay,
like, if you can get to 415 right now, we'll take it and walk away. So just a beautiful deal for us. We're able to buy it for $415,000. We're probably going to spend about $25,000 on it. And since we spent that $25,000, we're going to list it for like $549 now and get a return on the money that we're putting into the deal. So have a gross spread of around, let's say, $100,000 maybe, give or take. And we're able to provide an awesome service for these people that just want it out, man. So I love buying these not super distressed type of houses. And those are the pictures that are up there if you're watching. Before we bought it. Yeah, that's what it looked like. Had a beautiful kitchen, had a beautiful great room. I think it was an atrium ranch, and just a really cool deal.
Yeah, so this just goes to show, again, that flexibility. So we buy distressed houses. We buy mainly that. But what we do is we help people out of situations. They weren't a distressed seller. They had their options. They're like, if I could maximize this and go through this process and have people walk through my house and we have to worry about when I got to move, when I can't move, I can make an extra 10, 15 grand, or I can just give it to you guys and make a little less but just be done. And that's what they did. So that's the beautiful thing about having options. My point is, and I've been doing this, harping on this social media a little bit, but like if you're just looking for rental properties, Walls, you're going to miss this one.
Yeah.
So if you have multiple options and just go try to find the deal, you can, I don't know, we'll net 50 grand, 40 grand on this. And it was a simple, simple, clean deal.
For sure. And this is one of those deals, like the main buying formula that we talk about here is ARV times, let's say 80%, 75 to 80%.
Minus
repairs.
Yeah.
80% for a flip, let's say, if you know we're going to flip it.
Okay.
And this is one of those deals that just didn't quite hit that. But as you get into these higher price points, this is higher price point in our market, you can kind of start to implement some of your own strategies. Like when we get above $400,000, we implement an ROI strategy. So we want to make 10% of our money. So if we're into this thing for 450 grand, we want to make $45,000. So that's $45,000 we wouldn't have made if we used our normal buying formula.
Yeah, I think it's a good point to put out there. Is I honestly think, I mean, things shift, and you know, we're shifting away from have to do everything BRRRs. I think that like a max allowable offer formula, I think that's more of like a first buyer home price in most markets. I think once you get above that, things have to shift a little bit because, you know, again, like our offer would have probably been like, you maybe set it probably in the mid threes.
Yeah.
And we would have been 60 grand off and wouldn't have made it. So. Yeah. We obviously would have made 100 grand if we did it, but that's, especially in this situation, there's not distress. They just wanted the easy button.
Yeah, for a fix and flip, especially if you're on the coast or in a, you know, a high value market, yeah, look at that ROI formula to make 10% on your money versus the normal discount percentage offer that we do.
Perfect. All right, that was a quick little deal of the week. Love it. Do you have the afters or no?
Hey, shout out to all.
He's got ooh, there's the afters for the radio audience. You better go
did
to YouTube and
bunch.
Check this out.
Painted it, staged it.
Maybe what is the thing with those blue? Is that?
I don't know.
Are those stickers that come off?
I don't think so. I think that's
why would
just
you have? Yeah, but why would? What is that blue film on there?
I think it's one of those touchscreen ones, maybe.
No, there's not a screen in there, you knuckle.
I think there might be.
No.
Yeah.
No.
But I'm not sure, or it's just like the color, and it looks kind of funky in the.
Ooh, they got a flat screen by the tatuba.
Didn't do much here. Just threw a little flat screen up. Yeah. Oh, put in those barn doors downstairs. This basement is insane. It's like a two-bedroom, three-bath, 1,500 square foot basement
downstairs. Yeah,
finished. So it's super nice, and this is on a golf course too. So beautiful on a course that we played before.
We have played there.
You've probably hit a house there.
I'm sure I have. Yeah.
Yeah. For sure.
If there's a house about 250, 240 yards away on the right side, yeah, that's the danger zone.
Yeah. Mine's probably more on the left, a little hook action.
Yeah, you get a little hooky dooky sometimes.
So on this particular hole that house is on,
I'm safe. You're not.
I'm not. This is right in the hook zone, mm-hmm. in that same 200, 250, whatever it is. But this house is on the other side of the street. So it's safe.
Safer. I feel like when I hit my drive, it goes like. It travels in the air like 270 yards, but it only goes like 240 yards because it's got such a slice. Yeah.
Hey, shout out to Rockefeller there. Just got a midterm rented to an insurance company for $7,000 a month for a 1,500 square foot house.
That's midterms, bro.
Yeah,
why'd I make
amazing.
That noise?
Good work, man.
All right, riddle me this, Walls. You're going down.
I for sure am.
These
I
are tough. Shane's mad at you for missing out, so he came with the fire. All right, riddle me this, Lucas. What is the first capital of the United States?
I should know this. Is it a riddle or is it like an actual answer?
It's a riddle. Makes it easier.
The first capital.
I think it was New York was the actual first capital, maybe.
Yeah.
Judging off my Hamilton show I watch.
Capital of the United States. The first capital?
What is it?
Is it, I don't know.
You. United States. It's
first capital letter. Yep. Good one, guys.
He's usually a good sport about this. All right, Lucas. Why can't you count the amount of people in the capital of Ireland?
There's no capital of Ireland.
It'd always be Dublin.
Okay.
These are not riddles. These are more just trick questions. Yeah. But I love it. 0-2, you loser.
I suck.
All right. Third one.
No, there's a long one.
When it at least you can read it. So when what requires no ticket but all the right timing? A thing you hope for arriving soon. You have to act fast or it's gone. Miss it now and you might be in the wrong. Goodness gracious.
What requires no ticket? So there's no ticket, like meaning like you have to buy a ticket to get into something.
Correct. No,
right?
You don't need it for this.
But all the right timing.
Got to time this thing right. Yeah.
All right. A thing you hope for soon arriving.
You want them here.
Want them here. You have to act fast or it's gone.
Strike while the iron's hot.
Or miss it now and you might be wrong.
I wouldn't worry about that last one.
Okay.
Ready?
Yeah.
An opportunity.
Mm.
0-3, how do you feel right now?
I was so far off on those two.
Well, that was not quite the usual riddles you get, but I'll take it. I like it when you look dumb. It's fun for me.
Yeah.
Gosh, all right, true, false, me. Hope I go 3-3.
All right.
Oh, the answers are on mine.
Are they?
No, I'm just kidding.
Yeah, wouldn't surprise me.
These are way tougher, too, because it could be 69 or 67%, so he made mine tough, too.
Well, what do you think it is, Sam? Over 60%, 68% of Americans dye their hair.
I'm going to say under.
That's 71 up there. It's over 75%.
Why it says 68 on my sheet of paper?
It says 71 up there. Oh. Either way, you're wrong.
Okay, dang it. That's not true. 75% of Americans dye their hair? What? No.
Shano, think about women in particular. I would say it's like 90% of women.
Yeah, but then that would mean 50% of men. No.
That could be right.
Who do you know that dyes their hair that's a male?
Have you?
No.
Maybe it's ever.
I did do like the blonde bowl when I was younger.
Oh, yeah, everybody did. A little sun in.
So maybe at some point in your life. Okay, fine. I'll let it slide. I take back my red flag.
All right. Every peanut that is grown in the United States has a 33% chance of ending up as peanut butter.
The rest of it's on the floor of Texas Roadhouse. I'm going to say false because I bet it's more than 33%.
Yeah, no, it's true. Okay. So 1/3 of peanuts become peanut butter.
I believe that 100%. I just figured it'd be higher.
Well, I mean, there's not a lot of things to do with peanuts, I guess, then.
I mean, not a ton, no. Not peanuts. I mean, like, there's nuts used in salad and stuff, but not peanuts. What do you use peanuts for?
Just regular peanuts, like ballpark.
Yeah, but that's
and
not...
And then, like, you can buy, there's like 30 ballparks of peanuts that are already shelled.
Yeah.
Right? But
have you ever done that?
Yeah.
You bought unshelled peanuts?
For sure.
Oh, like a roasted peanuts and stuff? Yeah.
We do cashews mainly now.
That's not peanuts.
1/3 of cashews turn out as cashew butter. True or false?
False.
Yeah,
all right.
That one's false.
Yeah. All right, go.
All right. Only 90% of Americans get married.
False.
Only 90%?
False.
So what do you think the answer is?
Less than 90%.
No, the answer is false, but it's 95%.
I got it right. I'm 1-3. 95%.
90% of Americans get married. Feels high.
Shane, I don't know where you get these fucking answers from, but we'll go with it. All right. Perfect. Motivation Wednesday. Why don't you read the quote? Because I'm all read out.
All right. Our motivational quote for the day is, all right, you have brains in your head. You have feet in your shoes. You can steer yourself in any direction you choose. You're on your own, and you know what you know. And you are the guy who will decide where to go.
Dr. Seuss.
Dr. Seuss.
I love that quote. Love me some Dr. Seuss. It's basically saying you are in control of your own destiny.
And you have what you need.
Yep. I'm going to stretch it a little bit, but it's just similar to what's been on my mind recently you control, I have like a tweet I need to get out, but like you are, I thought of this as a hook for a video. I'm going to shoot it out to you. I don't think this will work. Gosh, this was late the other night, but I can control anything because I control how I react to it. Like I can control something that happens across, just I control how I react to it. So I have control over it, because if I can't control what happens to somebody else, that's doesn't have any bearing on me. So the fact that I control how I react to things, yeah, it's not going to be a good short, but I control how I react to things. So you have a lot of control. So that's kind of what this is saying. You have control
very
over your...
Very similar to what this is saying. I take it a little different direction. I don't find myself like feeling sorry for myself very often, but I did this morning like a little bit. I don't even remember what I was talking. I think it was like my back was hurting or something.
Always had a bad back.
And I was like, God, I never have time to I'd go check it out or whatever. I'm like, stop feeling sorry for yourself. No one cares.
I don't.
No one cares. You especially. Mm-hmm. It's up to me to figure out how to make my back feel better. That's it.
Or just stop complaining about it.
And it hurts.
Get over it. You'll be fine.
So kind of along this, you know, nobody cares about your excuses, period.
I mean, you definitely took this in a different direction. This is just basically saying.
You have control over wherever you want to go.
Yes, that is true.
Dr. Seuss is a brilliant doctor. He was PhD.
What
was he a PhD in?
I'm going to guess psychology.
Yeah.
When we look that up, what do you think Dr. Seuss, what is his doctor? Or is it just like part of his like name?
I'm going to say dentistry.
He's not a, well, you never know. What was the, or was he, maybe he wasn't even a doctor.
Yeah, maybe.
That's what we need to do. We need to tie some of like the Q&A true and falses to this. So he wasn't a doctor.
Yeah. Did some post-doctorate. Yeah, was not a doctor in literature. So, not a doctor. What about Dr. J?
He was a doctor.
Julius Erving? I don't think so.
Why would he be called Dr. J then?
Yeah, I don't know. Nickname, bro.
Nickname, bro. All right, perfect. Walls, thanks everybody for watching. We're not done. We got to shoot the basket in the hoop. Shoot the basket in the hoop. I think we're tied.
I think we are too.
Oh my gosh, you're 0 for your last two. I just want to close my eyes, but I'm not going to.
No. Take the lead. I missed. Sam made it. He's up one. Son of a biscuit. See you guys.
Did you see the latest Bluey? Oh my gosh.
No. It's good. They trash it?
28 minutes.
Thanks for listening to today's episode. We hope you got some major value from our conversation. If you love what you learn, make sure you like, rate, review the show, and help us spread the word by telling a friend.
If you'd like to learn more about working with me inside one of my programs, we'll have those links in the show notes, along with all our social media handles, so you connect with us there for free. If there's a real estate question you'd like us to answer, feel free to send us a message, and we'll cover it in an upcoming show.